You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Penny Rose. Isn't that a cool name? I like it. I do. I think it is. Penny and I talk about how she and her husband several years ago made the choice to downsize from their life and their brick and mortar house and all the stuff they had and take their lives on the road in an RV. So this is a conversation that actually at this time has a lot of personal synchronicities for me. If you are a longtime member of the audience, either watching or listening, you may have picked up on the fact that the five episodes right before this one released were actually recorded while I myself was doing some traveling and on the road. And part of that was an experiment to see how and whether I can maintain and create and grow this channel and this show while being on the road and traveling. The answer, if you're curious to that, is still being figured out, but sort of. And there's a learning curve. This is actually my first interview back in my traditional, regular brick and mortar Sticks and Bricks production space. And so I had a lot of questions about Penny and the choices they made and how they made it work and how it has changed their life. So that is enough about me. Let's get to this conversation. Penny Rose, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
I am. I am so happy to be with you today, Amy, and I'm so excited to talk about this topic. And this is a great opportunity to share the crazy moves that we made in our life.
I love it. I love it. So I begin every interview that I start asking people where they call home in the world. I love to ask people this question. Share with us where you are today.
We are just outside of Orlando, Florida, and we call this our domicile. So we're here about half of the year.
Very nice. So this people who are in this space of nomadic living will have picked up on that word domicile. We're going to come back to that in a second. But one more warm-up question before we dive into the topic of the day. This episode is going to go live right at the start of the year. And so I thought it would be fun to ask you whether or not you have any New Year's Day traditions that you are willing to share with us.
Yeah, my husband and I have always had a Jeep Wrangler. And our New Year's Day tradition, barring any bad weather, is for us to ride around with the top down.
Very nice. I love it. I love it. So New Year's, that's, I love it. I love the whole Jeep culture. And I was, so there's the thing where people leave each other the ducks in the Jeeps. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I can be sort of prickly. I don't even have a Jeep. I have no dog in this fight, but I was in a parking lot recently and there was a Ford Bronco, which is also a very cute car, right? But this Bronco had all the ducks lined up in the dashboard. And I was like, no, wait a minute. That's not how this goes. This is a Jeep thing. You can't, let me tell you how not involved I was. It wasn't my car. There was no one in it. I wasn't involved in the situation. I still was emotionally involved in the social correctness of this ducking. Anyway, that's the kind of person I am. Not the topic of the day. What we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about today is a shift that you and your husband made where you got rid of a lot of your material stuff and you started living life in what we call a full-time RVing adventure. This is something that I think a lot of people have dreams of and hopes of. It's on the to-do list for a lot of people who are in the audience today. So I'm excited to talk about it. Let's start with this. How long ago did you guys make this change?
Well, talk about a New Year's resolution or a New Year's habit. My husband and I slept in our RV the first night when we bought it. We slept on the lot of the RV dealership on December 31st of 2019.
2019. All right. So
we're
that
going on 5 years.
5 years. All right. Very good. So you bought it all and you slept in it. All right. So I have lots of questions. Let's dive in. My mind just went ding, 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 with all of the questions. How long did you guys dream of this or plan for this change before you put it into action full time?
It was about 2 years, and it was We were watching RV families on YouTube just thriving and living an amazing life. And we were somewhat stuck in our, in the RV space. We call it sticks and bricks, is where you live before you live in an RV. And we were having trouble in Florida. I don't know if there's any, if you're familiar with Florida and homeowners insurance, we were getting
Yes.
canceled every other year. And the insurance company was basically telling us what to do. And when we'd get the homeowners insurance resolved, then code enforcement would come around with some other idea. And I just had kind of a throwaway line to my husband: "Hey, wouldn't it be great if we lived in an RV full time?" And he didn't answer or say anything at the time, which I'm very thankful about. And then about a month went by, and he said to me, kind of a throwaway line, "Hey, wouldn't it be great if we lived in an RV full time?" And I knew that he had been processing over that month the possibility that we would make a change.
Very interesting. So I am also in Florida. I'm in super South Florida. I live in Miami-Dade County. And so I am intimately familiar with that cycle of insurance and code enforcement that you talk about. It is definitely something that I think that people who are outside of this geographic region may be aware of, may not fully understand the cost and the pressures that go with it, because it is just so crazy. It is just so crazy. So there's a joke when you do renovations on your house, like how slowly the contractors work and how they're on timetable. This is an old story. This is from over a decade ago, but we were replacing new windows and things like that, and the building code Miami-Dade County updates every 12 to 18 months. And so your permits expire. You have a finite amount of time between you to pull the permits for windows for when they have to be installed. And we had, it was an old house. It was like there was nobody was doing anything wrong. Nothing was going on. But it took a while to get these windows installed. And then we hit a point where, like, every contractor that I'd ever talked to in my life was in my house all the time. And I was like, what is going on? And the GC was like, we have to finish this or get new code approval if we don't do this by this certain date. You've never seen people move so fast, which is hilarious because they're like, we will do anything to not have to meet the new building code. Like, cause we don't even know what it's gonna say, you know? It's just like, I mean, I'm not in construction, so it's not, but that is the thing. But yeah, it is a whole thing down here. And so this is then, if you pulled the trigger 6 years ago, this is 8 years ago that you guys are bouncing this around. You've got the reality of the American dream and the nuts and bolts of upkeep on a house and living in a state that's in hurricane path that is in there. What, tell me a little bit about, you said family. I am curious, like, what was the family like? Do you have kids, like school age kids that are in this package, or is it you and your husband? Who's involved in making this decision?
So we were watching RV families, but families with two to three kids. We're just in it with our pet.
Okay,
So
so all right, so
yeah, so it's just
adults and
yeah.
fur kids.
Yep. Yep.
All right, they're very good. Okay, so I have a couple questions about mindset before and planning. Mindset and planning that I was thinking about that you might have gone through before you actually hit the road with this. The first is, if you can go back to that time frame, like between 6 to 8 years ago, before you made the change, talk to me about the motivation. You mentioned insurance and getting out from underneath the sticks and bricks house that you lived in, but let's talk a little bit about more about, like, what maybe were the motivations that were driving you guys in making this change?
So the biggest one was finance. We are My husband and I are both personal finance nerds, and we knew that more than likely we would be able to free ourselves up to travel much more if we weren't weighted down with the house and we weren't weighted down with the responsibilities and having to be in one place. So it's kind of like the intersection of travel, being other places, living other places, basically, is the way that we look at it, and the freedom, because we knew that when we sold our house, we would be debt free.
Okay. All right. So you had some financial investment. I have a question, a very specific question about, because I didn't know when before we talked whether or not you were an owner or a renter. What was the square footage, if you remember, of where you were living before you went into RV life?
So that's the even funnier story. So we were in about 1640,
Okay.
1,640 square feet. But my husband and I were older when we got married for the first time, and my husband had a 1,400 square foot house that was full of stuff, and I had the 1,640 square foot house that was full of stuff. And we when we got married and combined, we had to get rid of stuff just to even combine. But the 1,600 square foot house was so full of stuff that we couldn't even get to the thing that we wanted to use. We thankfully never got to the point where we went out and bought something just because we couldn't, like crawl back into the space. But we obviously weren't using our space for very much besides storing stuff that we couldn't even get to.
Okay, very good. So 1640 plus 1,000 square feet of other stuff was what you were doing. All right. So I want to, before we talk about the stuff, which is like actually getting rid of the stuff, I want to talk about the other things, the other ties that you had to your location that you needed to sort of resolve before hitting the road full time. So like ties to brick and mortar jobs. I don't know if you guys had that when you were going. Like so office commitments, extended family members who were in the community clubs, gym memberships. What were some of the things that were also on that? Because we'll talk about the actual stuff, the furniture and things like that. But what were some of the other things that came up that were cutting ties to a physical location that you had to deal with before hitting the road or right after you hit the road, things that came up?
The most significant thing that was a tie, that was much more easy to break because we had already moved out of our we were already living the RV lifestyle. It was our physical location and jobs. My husband and I are both retired from the FBI,
Okay, wow, that's
and
cool. Okay. Don't get to talk to people who are retired FBI every day. Sorry, it's caught me off guard. Love it. Keep going. So you're retired FBI. Coolest thing I've said so
yes.
far today.
So when we initially it moved into our RV, something it, moving into your RV and still being able to go to work in the same city is something that is much, much easier to do in Florida than it is other states, because we just moved from one part of town to another part of town, and we were still able to, basically at that point keep all of our ties. Basically we only moved out of our neighborhood, and
Okay.
so we don't have any family in Florida, and so that wasn't an issue. But we had churches, and
Yes.
we had personal finance club memberships in person that we met with. And so during the 2.5 years that we still lived in the community and went to our jobs, people had seen the dramatic change that we had made in our lives, and they understood that that time period was precious with us, and that they would only have us for that time period. And so we spent basically that 2.5 years to say, hey, we're not going to be here past this date. And my husband, when we initially moved into the RV, we were thinking that we would still be working even to this day. I wasn't scheduled to be able to retire until I think maybe like next August.
Okay.
So I'm on some free time here that we never anticipated. And then my husband wasn't scheduled to retire like for another year of January. So he wasn't going to be able to go until January of 27. And so the fact that we had already made the move into the RV meant that when my husband was offered early retirement for the FBI, meaning his pension started right away, and FBI employees, as most government employees do, we can retire with our full health insurance benefits for the rest of our lives. And as soon as, we were able to accept the offer because we were already debt-free. And so he went 5 years early, and I went as soon as we knew it was, definite that he was going to get this early retirement that we wouldn't have been able to accept if we'd still lived in our house. Then we started looking for ways for me to leave my job, and I left my job just, almost 3 years early.
Very cool. So you already mentioned that you were personal finance fans, students, aficionados. This was a big part of your,
Money nerd.
it wasn't your job though, because you were working unless you were accountants for the FBI, which maybe it could be, I don't know. But and I also don't know where the line is, which you're allowed to ask people who used to work for the FBI. Like I say, I don't know if it's secret or not. So anyway, you can tell me if it is or not. But it sounds to me like a couple things are clear. One, you guys are very logistically oriented, and you make a plan and then you execute on the plan, which I gotta say, I find that a respectable skill from anybody who's affiliated with law enforcement. Just lines right up with the things that I think are good skills. And so you make a plan, you've got 2 years. Then I think I'm understanding you guys were living in the RV, but in your home community for a couple of years, and you had a deadline. You set a deadline. So you were notifying all of your communities. You're like, this is our plan, so on and so forth. And it looks like that's what I understand. You're nodding along. A big part of this, though, sounds like it's the awareness that your freedom and your mobility as an ability to be able to do things really hinged on being able to reduce your month-to-month expenses so that you could have, yeah. That's an interesting thing because I have not gone through retirement yet or any of these things, but I talk to people about this. I think it's something that surprises people, is the process of thinking about what do I want my life to cost in the future when I no longer have a salary. And one of the things that you highlighted that I'll call out for the audience is that you're aware that you had what is an amazing perk, which is that you had health insurance that came transported from your job. And not everybody has that these days. They have to, go out and figure out how that's going to happen and when it switches. And I have not had to do that, but I think it's even more complicated than the home insurance market, is my understanding. All right, so very good. Okay, so now let's talk about what you guys did with all of this stuff. So you downsized from having a very, very full 1600 foot brick and mortar house, and you move into an RV. What's the square footage of your RV?
It's about 250.
It's so small. It's so small. 250. What did you guys do with your stuff? Did you sell it? Did you give it away? Did you throw it away? How did you do that?
We did all the things. So we had the extra fun opportunity to do this during COVID.
Okay.
And normally, people who work for the FBI aren't allowed to work from home. And thankfully, because of COVID, we had the opportunity for 6 months. The first 6 months of pretty much the first 6 to 9 months of our full-time RV living, we had the opportunity to work from home, which meant we were supposed to be in our house anyway. So we did not sell our house for almost a full year after we moved into the RV.
Oh,
And
so you
so,
were living in the RV, but you still had sort of like storage in the house.
yeah, exactly. That's how full it was. It took a lot of time to get rid of things. And the first thing that we did with the RV is We get a brand new RV where we start taking stuff out of the house. Does this fit? Does this fit? Does this fit? And we brought what fit, and then what didn't fit, was, hey, let's figure out how to get rid of this. So we basically did all the things, and it was harder to do, I think, during COVID, because there were some donation centers that were shutting down, and people were a little less likely to meet at your house to buy something or to, but we went through everything multiple times. And I think that's kind of the secret for us. We had gotten a really good advice that was, number one, do not plan to have a storage unit.
Okay.
Plan, you know, a storage unit needs to be the last thing on your mind, because what we've seen other people do is, if they have a storage unit, they'll just start filling the storage unit and stop looking at their stuff, and then they'll get half of what they think they need to go in the storage, and they'll have filled the storage unit, and then they're, going to a new storage unit and, emptying the old storage unit and filling up the new storage unit. And so our thought, the next piece of advice that we got that was really good, was to just focus on one room and plan, by the time you finish that room, for this iteration, that 50% of the things in the room are gone when you're done.
Yeah.
And then you just keep moving around the house until you get back to that room, and you go back to that room, and again, the second time you hit it, 50% needs to come out.
Did you guys, was it hard? Was it hard to release the stuff that was in the house? Like, was it emotionally challenging?
No, actually, it was more logistically challenging, because we got to a certain point and we didn't want to look at it again. And my
Okay.
husband wanted to call for a dumpster.
Yeah, I
And
can see that. Yeah.
then I think once you've gone through every room of your house and looked at everything the first time, I think the next time you look at it, you realize it's just stuff, and you can't remember the last time you used it, and you really wish that you hadn't bought it. And especially being finance nerds, we're like, oh, so much money.
Yeah, no. Some people get very emotionally attached to things, and I respect that. And it can be a very, very emotional process for people. But there's the flip side of that, which is people who deal with the processing of stuff and the emotions of change and things. They do pretty much everybody is like, once you release your attachment to this stuff, you just it's like you are ready to let it go, and then you don't have to maintain it. But getting through that, getting through this is all the stuff we have and it's very important to us, and letting it go can be a long process. So you sold it. You got rid of it. You did not put it into storage. I am like you. I'm not a fan of people having storage units. There's a story I tell about my family in storage units with a move from years ago, which is that we put stuff into a storage unit and we did not look at it for a year. No one went even once, like not even once, nobody went. And then the renewal came to renew the storage unit. My husband was like, oh, we should renew it. And the rate goes way up. And I was like, no, we should not. He's like, we should go and look at what of this we want. And I was like, I can tell you we don't want anything because we don't even know what's in it. We haven't needed it for an entire calendar year. Just throw it all away, have it picked up, give it away. Have you ever seen that? There's a show on TV, which is people who bid on empty, like unclaimed storage units. And
Storage
then
wars.
they, oh my, that is such a wild concept. Very creative. Okay. So you didn't have any family in Florida, but when you were planning this move, when you were in that period of thinking it through, or even just those 2 years before you hit the road full time, when you told the people who were in your community that this was your plan, what did they think? What was the feedback that you got?
So for the most part, it was very positive. And I had one friend who was very concerned about us, during hurricanes. And we said, we're just gonna leave it. We're just gonna go to a hotel that's
Yeah.
not in an evacuation, and we're not gonna worry about it, because Everything we take with us when we go to the hotel during a hurricane is everything that's important. And everything else is just stuff because we'd already gotten rid of so much. And then other people were saying, I could never do that, but I really envy your ability to do that. And then I think the really the biggest feedback moment for me was when we actually did it and people said, oh my goodness, it's never that we bet against you. It's just that it's so nice to see that you've said you were going to do this and you just did it.
That is really interesting. What did it? So I think that this is a really interesting thing that happens when people make changes. I mean, it is not. How do you not think it is unusual for people to consider being nomadic? Maybe that's just my perspective, but I do think that it's very interesting that a lot of times the first round of feedback you get from people is about safety. Like, are you worried about your safety? And I think about that. I just think it's really interesting that's the thing that comes to people's mind. How did it make you feel when people, voiced that concern for you? Like, what was the feeling when you got that feedback?
The first thing I thought was, wow, this person really cares for me. And
Yeah.
they are, they are, this person is not going through it. She knows I'm the one that's going through it. And her first thought is about my safety, and she really cares for me. And as with anything like this, it was a little frustrating to try to assure her that,
Right.
that it was all going to be fine. And in the end, I quickly understood that this was more of a her problem than a
Yes.
me problem.
Yeah. That's
And
I don't think I
I
would feel
used
safe if I did it. So there, how could you be safe?
it, and then so then I just it mirrored back the concern and the care that she had for me towards her.
Yeah. I think that's very smart, and I think you picked up on it, and I think it's very interesting. But yeah, so I thought I'd ask how you felt about it. All right, so very good. So and but true, meant with love, and then people who are, I guess the word is surprised, but not in a disbelieving way, more of a, it's like it's nice to see that you made it happen. Okay. So 2 years ish, where you still have the brick and mortar jobs, where you're tied to the location. You've for a while, actually, it's like you've got two homes while you get rid of the brick and mortar house. At some point, you go on the road, full time RVing. And so, how did you, how often when you hit this? So, I guess now that I know more of the story, I have a couple of, this is a more complicated question. When you hit the road, were you guys still working in any capacity, or were you able to do full-time travel?
So we're able to do full-time travel because any work that we do up until this month, I do have a caveat for what we're doing this month. But I was a forensic accountant for
Okay.
the FBI, and so I did financial investigations, and my specialty within financial investigations was reviewing tax returns of people to identify criminal activity that where I would see their bank activity and know how much money was flowing through their bank account, and I would see what they report on their tax return, and I was able to say, there's a lot more money flowing through the bank account than what they're reporting. And so it was somewhat natural for me to become a tax strategist. And that is what I do. And that was being able to open my own solo CPA practice doing tax strategy was how I was able to leave my job 3 years early.
Okay, so but when you guys hit the road, you were very financially set to be retired, and then you also had set up your own business to be able to do that. Okay, so the next question I have about hitting the road is, when you started, how often did you change locations? And has that shifted then over the time as you've been doing this for a couple of years?
So we have, as I mentioned in the beginning, in the introduction phase, we domicile just outside of Orlando, Florida. And so we travel about 50% of the time. And when we are not here, we are on a 4 to 6 month trip. And then when we come back here, we are here until the next trip starts. And when we are traveling during that 4 to 6 month period, there are maybe 2 or 3 days where we move every day. And
Okay.
then there are times where we spend 1 to 2 weeks in basically the same place. And then we, a year ago now, my husband said, "Hey, let's go to Michigan on our next trip." And so we slowly traveled up to Michigan, made the most of our time in Michigan, and then slowly traveled back to Florida. And the best part that I should have realized this, but I never did, is that my husband is the trip planner. That is this, I'm working on people's taxes and he's planning our trips. And I look at where we are staying, and then I reach out to all of my contacts and say, "We are going to be in, say, Louisville, Kentucky, from this date to this date. Is there any way that, we can, my husband and I can meet up with you for you and your wife for dinner?" And so we are spending time with people that we love, that we would never get to see because we just happen to be driving through their city and spending a couple of weeks there. And we do the same thing with family. I look at the schedule and say, "Okay, while we're there, we're close enough to this family, let's make plans." And that is, it shouldn't have surprised me, and yet it did. It's been so sweet, the number of people that we see when we're out for that time period.
That is amazing. Okay, so before we go into the next question, I want to touch on this word domiciling that you use, which I have heard. And Florida is not the only state where you can domicile, but for people who are in the audience who are listening and watching, who have like a vision of nomadic life in their future, funny things happen. There are things that you need an address for. There are things that you need an address for. Explain a little bit about what domiciling means for people who are looking to travel.
So it means you are essentially establishing your tax home for IRS purposes. And that matters if you have a business, because when you are doing business outside of your domicile state, some of your expenses become a tax deduction. And so domicile is, it's not, it doesn't have to be your residence. It can be where you claim your home. And in the RV space, the three states that are most popular and most accommodating are Florida, Texas, and South Dakota. And
South Dakota is the place where you can go and set it up in 24 hours, right?
yes, all you have to do is spend the night in a hotel.
And they have that set up. I have not done this, but somebody sent it to me on, and I looked at the website. This is my full expertise on this, looking at a website for 5 minutes. But look, they have set it up like a concierge service. You come, they book you in, they make your appointments. It's like they have turned it into an easy thing to do.
Yes. Yeah, and that is part of, so part of what I do for work in tax strategy for people that are and primarily I get this from people that are in high tax states. Like, there's one on the West Coast, I won't name it. People need to very carefully look at all of their attachments to that state, because that particular state is considered to be very sticky.
Yeah, they
me.
pass through if they find out that you're trying to. So the state is California, and they will claw back taxes. Like the example that I used to know, you used to be able to buy a car in Montana and avoid the tax on the car. But the very smart people in some of the Western states figured that out, and they're like, no, if you come back and we find out that you've got the car, we're going to retroactively charge you all these fees. And I am not an accountant, but my lifetime experience is that paying retroactive bills is much more expensive than actually just paying them the first time around. In most cases. I learned that with parking tickets. Just pay it.
Oh,
Just
yeah.
pay it the day you get it. Like, don't even chance it. Don't set it on your desk. Don't put it where you think you'll remember it. Pay it right away. Don't deal with the fees. That is up. So very good. So you are a forensic accountant. That is very, and that ties into your business, which we'll come back with in a second. One of the things that I want to touch on that you led into, Penny, is about this, how you maintain your sense of community while you're traveling. Because I think that that's a thing that for a lot of people is connected to their brick and mortar location. It's often connected to their brick and mortar workforce. It's definitely a thing that's changing in modern times because we are so much more mobile. But talk about, and you figured that out. You figured out to reach out to the people who were your connections in these states. How do you maintain a sense of community and connection as you are traveling and doing all of these things?
So, in two ways, two big ways is number one, I mentioned a couple of times, we're personal finance nerds. And I was a member of an online membership community for other people who are personal finance nerds. And when the founder of it decided he didn't want it anymore, he said, "Hey, would you please take this over?" So
Okay. And so this is like
I
an
have,
online community.
yes,
Okay.
specifically for people that go to a personal finance conference every year. And the second way that I do that is I'm a member of another online community called RV Queens.
Okay.
And it is for women who live in an RV, either part-time or full-time, and have businesses so that they can travel. And it's specifically about those two communities are specifically about maintaining contact with your community. And once I meet someone, I'm like we met during an Entreprenista event, and there's another Entreprenista who lives in her ambulance full time. And we had a quick chat, and I said, "Oh, you might be interested in RV Queens." And she joined at that very moment. And so I am not only maintaining contact, I'm growing the community as I meet more people.
So that is like, okay, that is really good. So I remember that conversation, although I had not tied it together until you brought it up, because that is very good. One of the reasons, the question about how often you move is actually inspired. I traveled, I'd say a personal trip for most of the month of October. I wasn't in an RV. I was just in a rental car going from Airbnb to Airbnb. But there were two things that came up in my trip which inspired these questions that I was asking you. One is that I realized how much effort it is to change locations and how much of a disruption it is. And people have all kinds of guidance about this. So I had read the two nights in every, like that was the thing. But even that's fast. That's fast. That's considered
It
fast
is.
travel. And then there's others that are doing the more slow, and figuring out how it works in to your schedule for how often you travel. That's one thing. The second part of that is that for me, what came up, and I'll ask you about this, is when you are relocating and traveling, but also working, how do you create boundaries and separation so that both of those things can happen in the same time? Because I realized very quickly, I was like, oh, this is a place for me where I need a whole new set of boundaries. Like, are we traveling and touristing, or are we working, and how do these things go together?
That is such an amazing question, and there's a concept around it that people that who don't do what we do haven't even ever tested it. it's hard for them to grapple with, but there is such a thing called traveling too fast. And so many people that travel all kinds of different ways are, after the first year, they'll say, wow, we really traveled too fast. And but to bring it down to your specific question is that we look at where we stay. If it's more than a night, we actually look at it as if we live there.
Okay.
We are living, and so we may be someplace for a week, and we may only set aside a day to do the touristy things in that area because, we're choosing to live there. And so it'd be the same as, we're outside of Orlando. This is, our domicile. This is what we consider to be our home. We wouldn't necessarily do touristy things 3 to 4 times a week. So when we're on the road, we keep that same pattern that I have a happy hour scheduled for tomorrow with some RV queens who are in Florida, and that is something like what I would do when we were out on the road.
So yeah, that is, I think that is the shift. It's like, are you living there or are you touristing? And the two things don't always work in the same calendar is what was my exposure to that. And then the other thing that I realized is how long it takes to find the cool things any place that you are, right? Like, which I think we all know, right? Like, so like if you go someplace and you're only there for 24 hours, what do you see? You see the highway and you see, the lobby or hotel or whatever place that you're staying. And it takes a while to find, the coffee shop that you like, or even to find like I run as a hobby, to find a place to run that you like, that takes a couple of days. It's like hard to do. Anyway, those are my personal thoughts. That was what inspired those questions, and I love your feedback. All right, so you change locations based on how long you're doing. You domicile in Florida, which means that, and in Central Florida, which means that every time you start those trips, you've got 7 to 8 hours to even before you get out of Florida. That's one of the challenges of being so far down in the peninsula. So if you go to a place like Michigan, you're traveling slowly, meandering your way up, and taking time. And then you, like, when you usually stay someplace, if it's a place where you're going to be, is you're talking about a week or 2 weeks? How long do you guys like to be in places?
So it's a week, either a week or 2 weeks. I mean, there will be a point, I think. Oh, and actually, I should take this back. Our very first trip, as you know, once we were, cast off the tethers of our brick and mortar job, was to Arizona, and we spent 3 months in the same RV park in Arizona. So
Okay.
we have done longer stints, and you're exactly right. There are things that we learned about because we didn't have to rush to get it all in for the short period of time that we were there. But in the last 2 years, we haven't spent more than 2 weeks in one location. Part of the fact that, so we were, and I don't think I mentioned this. So we started out our full-time living. We were employees of the Jacksonville office of the FBI. And so we started out in Northeast Florida and then came to Central Florida. And so part of what we do on our way out of town is to go spend time in St. Augustine, Florida at the beach, or, we'll go and so we look forward to being tourists inside the state of Florida. And there,
Yes.
you know, there is, and we've over time developed RV park favorites that were like, there's one in, Alachua, Florida, in the middle of nowhere, basically, just outside of Gainesville. And they, through work, when we were for the FBI, I needed to, have a place to eat, and one of my favorite restaurants is in Alachua, and so we make sure that we stay, either start our trip or end our trip in Alachua. And we go to that restaurant for dinner one night and breakfast the next morning. So we really make the most of, wherever we are when we're there.
So, and I think that w the way I would describe it, let's see if this resonates with you, and then we'll move on to the business, and wrapping this up, is that you've created familiarity and community in and traditions as you travel. These are parts of the travel that are connections that you are taking with you. All right, so I love that. I absolutely okay. So we've touched base on this. You work, you have a company. The work you do is now very aligned with the lifestyle as a full-time RVer that you do as a nomad. And did that evolve then once you were on the road, or did you already know you were going to do that before you hit the road?
I knew who I was going to work with went before we hit the road. I knew that I wanted to be able to give back to the YouTubers that we saw when we were still, stuck in, the American dream. I wanted to be able to give back to those folks and help them stay on the road. If you are a travel creator, your biggest fear is that your business is not going to be able to sustain your travel, and you will have to go back home to a traditional job and a traditional house. And so from the very beginning, I set my business up to help those type of people stay on the road as long as they choose to be on the road.
And so what you do, so when we talk about travel creators, these are people who are creating content primarily on YouTube, TikTok, that is influencer content. And when I mean influencer, it's like they're like sort of vlogging their own sort of life and experiences.
Yes, that's right.
And so very good. And so you work as an accountant to help them with that. I think that's really interesting because I think there's two things about it. One is I think it's a very confusing part of like how people make money and how you declare it and what you're supposed to pay in different places. It's like this, it's sort of like, ooh, it's coming from out of, so not a lot of people are expertise on it. And two is I think that I'm going to make a global statement that includes me in in this somewhat. A lot of times people who are in the creative space are not the people who should be handling their own accounting. Like it's like really actually a space where you hear a lot of times people get surprised by it. And so I think that that's really interesting. All right. So I want to give you a chance to tell the people exactly about what you do and how they can connect and find you online.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I primarily have been up until recently, I have been working what is similar to a traditional CPA. Meaning that I offer, a monthly subscription and people have access to me all year long. I create a tax plan for them so that they're not paying a dime or a penny, as we say, more than they need to in taxes. They're able to keep more of their revenue. And then I, at the end of the year, in April or March, I file their tax return for them. So when a question comes up, they have access to me and I'll help them answer it and guide them. But I have recently, at the request of a nomadic influencer agency,
Didn't
I
even know
create.
that was a thing. Nomadic influencer agency. Those are where
Yes.
that's very cool. Okay, sorry. I
Yep.
interrupted you, Penny.
No.
Go on.
No, I love it. So the founders of the agency know that most of the influencers who have signed up to be part of the campaigns that the agency sets up for them, they don't have their financial ducks in order. It's just like what you mentioned, people that are creative and artistic are not maybe as detail oriented as they need to be. And so I am by the time this episode airs, I will have a course that's available for people to purchase. And it's five modules long. It's specifically designed for people to get through it in a weekend. And it cuts through all of the bad tax advice that people are hearing on TikTok and says, here are the minimum things you need to do to set up your financial foundation so that, we can worry about whether you need to be an S corp a lot later. Let's just get you as a LLC at this point. And so that is the I think it, on either end of the equation, basically, this course is for people who are not necessarily ready to hire me for traditional CPA tax services, but they'll be in a lot better position to hire me later if they do all the things they need to do as early as possible. Basically, I look at it like you're creating a container and for the money to flow into. And once you've created it, the money will flow into the container, and then later you will want to figure out how to hold on to more of that money. And so I'm also launching a podcast
Okay.
where a micro podcast where I will talk about the feelings around why creators and influencers may not have done all the things that they know that they need to do, and to try to, help people feel better that yes, it's normal for you to feel that way, but let's take a step anyway.
So, and when you talk about that feeling, is that things like, oh, I don't like paying taxes?
No, it's my business isn't big enough. I don't make
Ah,
enough
okay.
money.
All right, very
I
good.
don't need to worry about running my business through my personal checking account.
Oh, well, that, okay. So, yes, anybody who's listening who's got a dream of being an influencer should leave right now and go log in and open a bank account. Like that is rule number one, open a business account that, and maybe once upon a time it used to be hard to do, but now it's not hard to do. Open the business account and learn the word commingle and don't do it. That's business advice from Amy. Learn what it is and don't do it. Like, so that's it. All right. So Penny in Your Pocket is the name of the business, and you're launching a course and you're launching a micro podcast. All of that is super excited. And we will put all of the links to that in the show notes where everybody is watching and listening to the show. And this is where I encourage everybody who's in the audience to sign up for the email newsletter, which I call The Village. That's my community where I keep in touch with everybody. That is the easiest place to get all these links, you guys, because you don't have to open the app. You don't have to do anything. It just shows up in your email box and you can click on it. Penny, are you ready for my final three questions?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it. I realize that I just gave business advice and accounting advice, and I'm not qualified to do any of those things, but I think that it's a pretty safe thing when I tell people open a bank account and don't mingle
Yes, it
personal
is.
funds. Okay, there we go. All
It
right,
is
so
100%.
there we go. Now that I shouldn't be giving advice, but I give that advice, and hopefully I don't get in trouble. All right, we talked about you downsizing into the smaller space, and I'm going to make a guess that because it is so small, everything that you have serves a purpose. In your RV kitchen, what is a tool or a gadget or a device that makes your life easier or better?
So I'll talk about my new favorite gadget, which is an RV dishwasher.
What?
Yes,
Oh
it
my
is
gosh.
amazing. And it heats the water for me, and it dispenses the right amount of soap, and it dries and sanitizes, and I use it every day, and it is very luxurious. And yet, something that the RVers do that's different than a lot of people that live in sticks and bricks is that we eat at home most of the time.
Okay. All right. Very, that is, so is it installed or is it like something that's in a cabinet? You pull it out and turn it on.
Right now, we're able to we so we have sink covers.
Okay.
So we have a countertop that covers our sink. They're split, and so we're able to leave the dishwasher sitting on the cover of the sink, and so we just plug it in, and then it has a hose that comes out of the back, and that's how it dumps the wastewater,
Yeah.
and then I just use the sink when we're with the water that you would normally lose when you're warming up the hot water for the shower, I just capture that and I fill up the dishwasher every day with that water.
All right. That is very, very cool. It's living in an RV, spending time in a very small space, you're very aware of what you use and what you don't use. I've not done very much of it, but that is my lesson there. All right. This is a podcast. You're launching a micro podcast. If you listen to other podcasts, what is another show that you listen to that you would recommend to people who are in the audience? Like, give us a suggestion of something else we should listen to.
So my favorite podcast to suggest to people is Ramit Sethi's. I think it's Couples Money for Couples is the
Okay.
newest iteration of it, and there's so much to be learned about personal finance from Ramit's conscious spending plan, which he talks about in almost every episode.
All right, very cool. That is a great recommendation. All right. So, because you travel with your home, I'm not sure if this is a good question or not. We're going to find out. It came up. In every show, I ask a question that turns out to maybe not be such a great question. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. What is something that you take with you when you travel that makes where you are feel homey or like home?
Oh my goodness, I love this question. My grandmother, who has been gone for 40 years, made me a quilt, and it was I made a special request, and it's fluffier than the normal quilts that she made, and I'm still able to keep that with me, and I use it almost every day.
So that is the thing. That is such a great connection. Oh, I love that story. Very good. That's it. Penny Rose, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today in the show. And I have to say, for people who are watching this on YouTube, you can see that Penny is actually outside where she is recording this. And she started, we're recording this on Halloween, believe it or not. She started this. She's in Florida, Central Florida, where we're having a little bit of a cold snap that goes in quotations because we're in Florida. But she started with a jacket. But the quality of your connection being outside has been fantastic. I'm very impressed.
Thank you. Starlink all the way.
Woohoo! All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.